Alrighty, 7:41 here on the Mighty 690, and it is time for our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension. And joining us in studio, we have Holly Miner and James Coover. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, good to have you on. So, first of all, before we get into Holly's topic here today, and Holly, you may want to start off. I know you've got several events coming up, but I'm going to open the floor for any upcoming events you want to talk about.
Sure. So there's several different things going on in Family Consumer Science area. Dining with Diabetes, which is an online class, starts on October 10th and goes through the 31st. It meets weekly, and it's all online, so you can do it from the comfort of your own home. Registration, go on our website, the Wildcat Extension District website, and you can find registration information, or you can give us a call at 620-331-2690 for that registration information. October 20th, there's a Serve Safe Food Handlers class, which food handlers is good for people that work in restaurants or food service establishments. It's also good for people that have a lot of potlucks. So maybe a church or a civic organization does some potlucks, or they're feeding other people or offering fundraisers. The Serve Safe Food Handlers class is a great class for that. It's a minimum cost, and the cost covers the book. But there'll be one October 20th in Independence, and then one on November 13th in Girard. And then on November 16th in Pittsburgh, I'm going to do a ServeSafe Managers class. So those are the people that manage food service establishments. And that's an all-day class, and that's November 16th in Pittsburgh. And then moving into December, we're going to do something kind of fun with food preservation. We're going to have a holiday gift-giving idea class, and we're going to learn how to make jams and jellies and some specialty holiday items and help people understand what they need to do, and then have some decorative ways of fixing those things up to be given as gifts. And then in January and February, I have a Master Food Volunteer Program. So anybody that's really interested in food and wants to learn more, there's a course that can be taken. It's similar to the Master Gardener course. It's a great opportunity for people to be able to give back to their communities, and they learn about Master Food Volunteers. There's 6 weeks of training that goes along with that, and we start in January. And at the end of that course, they become Master Food Volunteers. And for more information on that, they can give me a call at that number that I gave a little bit ago, 331-2690. And we can talk about that. The registration deadline for that course is December 1st. So there's actually an application that is filled out, and then we talk and decide if this would be a program that would be a good fit for them. So it's not just anybody come. There is a process that we go through to select those people. And so if you're interested in that, it's a great opportunity to be able to give back to the community.
Excellent. Good deal on that. Lots of good stuff coming up. So I know, Holly, you wanted to talk a little bit about Dining with Diabetes.
Yeah. So diabetes, the prevalence of diabetes is increasing every year. And Kansas has quite a few people with diabetes in it as well. And so we want to make sure that we're addressing those issues that people face when they have diabetes, and helping people to be able to manage their diabetes in a better way. And I just was looking at some research just this last week, and in children up to age 18, in the last 2 to 3 years, the number of kids with diabetes increased 3%. And so I think it's really important that we address this. It's affecting our children. It's going to affect us all the way through life. And once you're diagnosed with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, there is no reversal. You can never get away from having that diagnosis, but you can treat it and manage it and be able to do so without having to take medication. So
because a lot of people know there's, you know, the type 1, which is more like hereditary
juvenile diabetes.
Sort of thing, and then there's type 2,
and these kids are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So you know, that's where your blood glucose level is high, higher than what it should be. And there's also a huge population, about one third of us are have glucose levels that are almost to the pre-diabetic diagnosis. And so if we can change our diet and think about what we eat and when we eat and how much we eat, have physical activity and be active, we can forestay that diagnosis and not be diagnosed with diabetes. So it's really important for us to take steps before we're diagnosed with pre-diabetes or with diabetes.
Now, if pre-diabetes, is that where, you know, it's possible to reverse some of the what's happening, I guess?
Yeah, so once you have a diagnosis, you can never go back, but you can make your numbers go down. And that's what we're trying, what happens when you're diabetic is you try to make your numbers go down. And you do that through, like I said, your diet and your exercise and just managing when you eat, how much you eat, those kinds of things. But I think it's important to note that you can prevent, in some instances, you can prevent that diagnosis from even happening if we take steps before we are diagnosed and even after. And a lot of people think that when they're diagnosed with diabetes that it's this huge life-changing event and that they can't eat anything that they enjoy. And you can still have your cake and eat it, but you need to think about, you know, is it a cake with a lot of sugar in it? Is it a cake with, you know, is it a big piece of cake? Is it a cake with frosting on it? You know, those kinds of things. So it's just in how you approach it. And a lot of times when we are diabetic, we are also overweight or have a body mass index that's higher than it needs to be. And so by having physical activity and reducing our weight, we can reduce the amount of medicine that we're on. I was reading some facts here, and the average person per person in 1 year spends about $16,750 on medical costs due to their diabetic diagnosis. And about 9,000 of that is directly attributed to the diabetes diagnosis, where the other $8,000 is probably addressing the things that happen, like neuropathy, your feet go numb, those kinds of things. It affects your eyesight. It can affect your hearing. Can affect your way that your wounds heal. And so all of those, and a lot of people with diabetes also have heart problems. So a lot of those things, if we're trying to stay healthy, reducing some of those symptoms or causes of the diabetes will also help us be healthier in the long run. So it's just important to think about what we're doing and how we're doing things. And maybe there's some little things that we can change. You know, you don't have to change everything all at once. Making a little step and changing a few little things could have a drastic effect on your life for the rest of your life.
Well, and I'm sure that there are some, you know, diet recommendations out there. I mean, we talk about sugars and even carbohydrates that eventually mm-hmm. are turned into sugars is something
right.
that people may not necessarily think about.
That's right. Yeah. You know, everybody talks about counting carbs, and when the body breaks down carbohydrates, they do turn into sugars. And that sugar level, we try to keep that sugar level in our diet. When we are thinking about our meal, we want to think about things that break down and how fast they break down. And if you have a choice between an apple and applesauce, and you choose the applesauce, it's going to go into our bodies a lot faster because a lot of the digestion part is already broken down. It's already started to be broken down as applesauce versus eating an apple. Or this, a lot of times, if you have a whole vegetable or a whole fruit in its true form, those are better choices than having something that's already started in the process, it being processed, like the applesauce or the mashed potatoes, having a baked potato or some other kind of a potato or another dish instead of a potato, because potatoes have a lot of starch in them, which also becomes sugar. So just thinking about your diet and what you're eating. And then I think two portion sizes, a lot of people, you know, if we have a 9-inch plate, we want to have half of that plate be fruits and vegetables, a little bit less than a fourth of it be your protein, and then a little bit more than a fourth of it be grains. And we want some of those grains to be whole grains. And a diabetic's plate is a little bit different. It has more fruits and vegetables and less grains and a good portion of protein. So, you know, that there's some differences there as well.
Well, and the other thing is corn is not a vegetable, even though, if you think of it as, that's more of a starch, right?
Yeah. So there are some foods that are considered starches. Potatoes, white potatoes specifically, are very starchy. Corn is another one, and your body really doesn't digest much of corn. So it is also very starchy. And English peas or the little round peas that roll around on your plate and fork and are hard to get in your mouth, those are very starchy. And, you know, you think of them as a vegetable, but they're a lot of starch. So there's some things there that you could avoid. Eating whole grains instead of processed flour products is good too, because you're getting the bran with it, which helps move the food through your digestive tract. And helps your health out that way as well. So just switching to whole grains is another great option for helping your body.
Well, and so Holly, obviously, you know, if someone has maybe recently been diagnosed with diabetes, this can be kind of overwhelming to figure out, okay, now what can I eat? Are there any resources out there available to help people navigate this process?
Yeah, so it's really important when you have that diagnosis that you ask your doctor to see a dietitian and set up some meal planning help through that dietitian or a meal planning expert. The Dining with Diabetes class will help educate you on what diabetes is and how to manage it, but it does not do individual meal planning. So working with your doctor and doing that through the doctor or the clinic, they have your medical records and they can prepare a plan that's specifically for you. And that's the best way to go with that, is working with that healthcare provider.
Sure. So if someone does want to get signed up for this class or any of the classes you have coming up here, what's the best way to do that?
They can call our number at 620-331-2690 to get more information. They can visit our website, and on the right-hand side of our website, there's any upcoming events page. They can go on to that, and usually there'll be a registration link on that as well. But or they can email me at haminer@ksu.edu.
Excellent. Well, lots of good resources coming up, lots of good things available for folks here in the future as we've head into fall and winter, and people may finally have a little more time to devote to some of these educational opportunities. Sounds like it's really going to be a good one.
Yep, when we're looking forward to having people join us and do all sorts of these classes, educational and fun. So we appreciate being able to do that. Oh, and Debbie's got a Stay Strong, Stay Healthy class coming up in September. Another good one if you are diabetic, you can, or if you're older and you're thinking that, hey, you know what, I'm not able to lift as much as I used to be able to lift, or I can't move as easily as I used to, that's a great class for strengthening. You know, one of the things that we do as we age, we can't get up out of a chair as easily, and this class will actually help to strengthen those leg muscles so that you can stay mobile and do things on your own for a longer amount of time. And it's a great class. There's been a lot. It's a research-based class, and it's been proven to be effective to help those older adults be able to stay mobile. And if you're mobile, you can live in your own house for a longer period of time and not have to have someone care for you. So it's
looks like a lot of fun too.
Oh yes. Yeah, that's fun.
Yes, it's a great way to get out and meet other people and have a social some social interaction as well.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they do
they
Debbie's
like little groups. They really, yeah, it's a lot yeah. of fun for them. I really
that is really good. So that's a yeah. great reminder there, Holly. James, what do we have coming up on our next segment?
So I'm going to be talking about clovers, actually. And so clovers, you know, those little things that grow in your yard, in your pasture, in fields. And there's all different types and kinds and places where they fit into our environment. So not very far from now is when we start to think about seeding clovers. So I just thought I'd talk about that before we get into the fall season.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we have all of that coming up. A little bit hazy today because of smoke from those Canadian wildfires. That's the thought, at least. Looking at 92 for our high. And right now in Coffeyville, we have 65. News on the way. Good morning, 8:11 here on the Mighty 690. 65 degrees, heading up to a high today in the low 90s. We continue our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. We have Holly Miner and James Coover in studio. And James, I know that you have an event that is going to be coming up in the area that you want to mention.
Yeah, and so up in Yates Center, actually, we're going to have the Bressner Field Day. That's when we can look at a lot of their native prairie and a lot of pastures, cattle talk pretty much, and forages. September 6th, 8:30, pretty much exactly 1 week from now. And so 1 week from right now, actually, is when that day's going to start. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of good talks up there, and I'll be up there as well. So
hard to believe that September is a week away.
Yes,
or less
I know.
Than that. It's at the end of the week,
yeah.
which is just, wow, okay. Well, hey, so a kind of timely topic. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about covers, and I know those are commonly planted this time of year.
Yep.
And something to consider because it can really make a big difference.
Yes, and so today I kind of wanted to talk about some clovers, actually. And
yeah.
so clovers, they fit in all kinds of different places. We see them in the environment pretty much of everywhere, but there's all different types, too, that we use for different things. And so, I mean, some are annuals, some are perennials. But pretty much all of them are pretty high in nitrogen because they make their own, of course, protein. And so there's about 50 different commercial types of clovers that can be used.
Which ones have four-leaf clovers? Is the
yeah.
How many do we get of those?
I don't know. I don't know which species would be more apt to make a four-leaf clover. That's a genetic abnormality, all that. I don't know. I've only found once in my life. So, in general, there are five main types of clover. And so there's red, white, sweet, crimson, and subterranean. So nearly all red, white, and crimson sweet clovers, they're ideally planted in the fall, basically 4 to 6 weeks before the first killing frost. So maybe about 2-3 weeks from now is when clovers are planted. This means, you know, the killing frost doesn't actually mean it kills them. It just means that it forces them to go dormant. So when it gets into the lower 20s, most species of fall plants can no longer handle those temperatures. So, you know, of those ones, I don't really know a whole lot about subterranean. That one's kind of odd. It sounds odd, right? And so they grow very different from the other ones, and they actually grow like peanuts. And so their little seed head gets pushed underneath the ground, and they grow from stolen to stolen underneath the ground.
Oh, my. Hence the name subterranean. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And they're the only ones that the flowers are not pollinated by insects. They're self-pollinated. So they, like, hide their flowers underneath the canopy. And so it's kind of odd. But I'm pretty sure we have a whole bunch in my yard. And so I was like, what are these? These are the weirdest-looking clovers. And I kind of dig them up, and they look weird. And it's like, I think these might be subterranean. So then I went back and looked, and that's what they were. So they are around.
Okay.
I mean, these weird little subterranean things, you might think they're normal clovers, but they're not. The reds, of course, they're short-term perennials. And so you plant them, and they're good for about 2 years before they, you know, they have to reseed themselves. Whites are also another lower-term perennial. So probably 4 to 5 years is how long whites can last. Sweets can be annual or biennial. Around here, the vast majority of them, we plant biennials. Annuals, they plant mostly down south. And crimson, it's always an annual. But the reason why I mentioned their lifespan is because which one you choose largely depends on where you're going to put them into what you're doing with them. It's so they're also... Some of them are pretty good for forages. Some aren't as good for forages. They kind of fit in different places. Like, you know, a little white Dutch clover might do all right, but there might be better ones to plant in your pasture than the little white Dutch ones, just because they don't grow that much. And so, for instance, sweet clovers, however, they can be toxic if you let that get moldy in hay. And so if you're kind of worried about that aspect, you maybe want to pick something a little bit different. Of course, they all actually create the compound that creates that toxin in it, but sweet clovers are more apt to do that. Now, that does not mean that people don't plant sweet clovers for hay all the time. In fact, they're really common. It's just that you make sure that that hay is fully dry and all of that. Make sure that you're not going to get a whole lot of mold in your hay. But it's rarely an issue, but it is a possible livestock issue. So both reds and whites, you'll need to reseed them from time to time because they're not going to last forever unless you let them reseed themselves, which is what most people do. And so grazing pressure is important. They reseed on their own pretty easily. And so once you seed a pasture with some red clover, you'll see red clover for a long time if you let those seeds redo themselves and you don't keep cattle pressure on it, because of course they're going to eat the red clover first because it's really good stuff.
Gotcha. So. Oh, and by the way, can you describe the difference, obviously, between annual and biannual? I know, just for the folks who may not know that term.
Yeah. So annual means 1 year. I mean, you plant it in the fall.
You just got to keep planting it.
Yes. Yeah. So you plant in the fall, it's going to be done by the heat of next summer. Biannual, we plant it in the fall. It's good for that first year after you plant it, and it probably will be good for the second year after you plant it. And so it's got,
you get almost 2 years out of it.
It's a 2 year. Some of them, of these clovers, they can go 3 to 4 years. Most of them, they're not forever. And so, I mean, eventually most of them are going to peter out over time. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind when you're letting reseeding, but most of these clovers, they'll reseed pretty prolifically too on their own.
Okay.
And so, I mean, if you harvest red clover, in a normal June time frame, like when you're doing your fescue, most of it's going to come back up and shoot a seed head back up in the fall and do a reseeding then. So you just got to be careful with them. But really, it's a pretty carefree cover crop, honestly. Hey. I mean, or interseeding into a pasture.
I like that. So what can clovers be used for?
So in a crop field, clovers they're planted with a grass cover crop, like rye or something like that. And it's a way to add protein or balance to a livestock forage mix. So you plant that cover crop, you're going to use it for something later on for cover. And, I mean, rye, of course, is a really good cover crop that you could turn into a forage. But if you want to bolster that protein up, you could put some sort of red in there, especially if you're not going to spray any kind of herbicide that's going to hurt that clover. So in a pasture, clovers can be interseeded. I'd say that's probably the most common thing that we do with our clovers. And so, you know, here in a few weeks, maybe you want to bush hog that pasture down short. A lot of bush hogging is happening right now anyway. So then you go over that field and try to push some clover seeds into that pasture, kind of bolster it. Our clovers were kind of hurt pretty hard in the drought that was last year. And so there's a lot of fields that maybe didn't have quite the clover population that they did before. And getting some more of that in there, probably not a bad idea. And so, of course, it adds protein. You know, it reduces the endophyte if you have K31 fescue, just because they're more balancing their protein. And, you know, with the native, you can actually expand your off-season grazing. And so with native, you know, we graze it during the summer. We pull them off in the fall. We let that clover grow, and then right after the first frost or right before it, you can put your cattle back on the native, and maybe that's a time frame that you can get some clovers in there too. So, you know, just kind of making things work a little bit better with pastures. And food plots, of course, we do a lot of clover just because deer love clover. They love soybeans. They love all broadleaves, especially ones high in protein. So if you're understanding that, you know, it makes sense that you can. Yeah, kind of like a deer trap. In the garden, though, clovers can be used as a mulch. Most people don't really think about that, in that, I mean, you're going to be seeding that stuff. Usually this time of year, your garden starts to get a little ratty. People get tired of it. Maybe you're just going to mow it over here in a few weeks. You can put some clover in that garden, let it grow up really, really well, and mulch it in, basically, before planting next year. And, of course, you can put that way out in your yards too. And so, you know, really anywhere fits. I mean, clover is everywhere, so everywhere clover can be in something. And so some clovers, like little white duck clover, Dutch, they stay pretty short, probably under 6 inches. Similar to Ladino whites, they can actually get much bigger. So it's like a Dutch clover. They just get much bigger. Usually in the field, what you're seeing out there, a lot of it is Ladino. So sweet clovers, like yellow sweet clover, you find them in like roadsides. They bloomed a little while ago, so you're not really seeing them much anymore. But that's what's growing so well out there. They don't look like clovers. They look like big, tall, bushy things with, you know, little yellow stripes on there. A lot of people don't really like yellow sweet clover, but in some places we plant a lot of it because it has a massive forage potential. There are some places down south where they plant the annuals. Those sweet clover can get to like 7-8 feet tall. I mean, it's huge, bushy plants of sweet clover. Makes a lot of forage. So, you know, sweet clover, it can grow in fairly marginal places too. That's why it's growing in those ditches. So you have pasture that's not really that great. You can mix that sweet clover with some other clovers, and that way the seeds will find the right place and fill in those niches. And so with crimson, of course, that's an annual. So that's usually mostly used for cover crops because you're going to take those out anyway. So those, that's the one that fits really well with that rye situation if you're trying to bolster that forage. So really there's a spot for all of them.
So it does seem like there's quite a bit of different variety. So how do you know which one to use?
So if you, which one to use, I mean, generally if you're using it for one season, like a cover crop, choose crimson. For grazing or haying, biomass production, you're looking at reds or sweets. White Ladinos, that's nearly always for a permanent pasture, something that you can put in there, and, you know, have them, expect them to be there for years and to go if you let them reseed themselves over time. And so personally, I like to see a yard full of white Dutch clover. And so in Dandelions, my wife would disagree with that. She likes a nice clean yard. But you know, I could see somebody, if they really like a kind of a messy yard full of flowers for the bees, you know, putting some clovers in there.
You and Jesse are on the same page on that.
Yeah. And I like a colorful yard maybe. So, you know, I'm actually considering having a clover variety plot at the Southeast Center there in Parsons. And so every year we do the wheat plots, of course, all the different varieties of wheat. I think it'd be really cool to see different clovers, all the different clovers lined up next to each other.
Because
they look
be great.
So different from each other. And it'd be fun to watch them grow side by side and show people the differences.
I think that's a great idea. Give people an idea of what they might expect, because sometimes it can be hard to visualize that and, you know, see the different heights that are available. There's quite a wide variety, it sounds like.
Yeah, it'll be really pretty when it blooms. So, you know, in the May time frame, you can see all the different types and colors of blooms.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's very cool. Well, if people do have questions on this, what's the best way to get a hold of you, James?
Yeah, so they can give me a call at the Girard office. The number is 620-724-8233.
Good deal. And while you're here, I know we had the report. I know the USDA and National Agricultural Statistics Service was talking about some of the corn condition here in the Midwest. Not super great in many areas.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah. And so the corn harvest is coming in, I mean, right now, and the yields are pretty much what we expected. And so in some places, they're down around 50 to 60, which is not great at all. I mean, that barely pays for the combine. But in some places, they're a lot better. I mean, over 100, probably 130, 140 in the good places. And so that's what we expected. I mean, here in the Southeast, some places got a lot of rain, some places didn't get any rain, and the variation is very high right now. So, you know, that's the name of the game here.
Yep. We just deal with what we got.
Yeah, so. The soybeans look a lot better than they did before. I mean, there's hot spots that look better than others, but hopefully we'll have a good soybean harvest. So,
hey, coming up. So, alrighty. Well, and Holly, I know that maybe we have some new listeners who just joined us. So, I was wondering if maybe you want to just go through some of the upcoming events here real quick and share some of that information for people.
Yeah. So, Dining with Diabetes online, October 10th through 31st. We meet once a week, and it's all online, so you can do it from the comfort of your home. ServSafe Food Handler Class, October 20th in Indy, November 13th in Girard, and ServSafe Managers Class, November 16th in Pittsburgh.
Alrighty, some good stuff, and I appreciate the both of you coming on the program today, and I look forward to chatting again here real soon.
Sounds good, thanks.
Thanks, James.
Alrighty, it's Holly Miner and James Coover of K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District, and we have an early bird edition of Open Line coming up on KGGF.